Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Yippee!
Hooray! Woo!
Yeah. So, it's podcast time, guys. I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. With me to podcast is Anthony Evans.
Howdy.
And Abigail Bain.
Hello.
Yeah. So, this week, I picked the film we all watched and are going to chat about. So, for the first time, possibly ever, I'm going to try and do the IMDb cast list thing that we do at the start. I don't even know what it's called. The bit where we clarify the film name and who's in it.
Go, Rich.
You can do it.
I can read. I just don't like to do it because I talk a lot. It's the only break I get in the podcast from my own wittering. And now I'm going to fill it up with my own voice. So, all that said, this week's film was The Killing of Sister George, which I picked just for the title. Isn't that a great title? It's so weird sounding.
Yes.
The Killing of Sister George is about a woman called June, who calls herself George, and a woman called Alice, who calls her... Oh, actually, I thought she was called Charlie, but actually she's called Childie.
Yeah, I thought the same thing as well.
So, some enunciation problems, I think. And basically, it's from 1968, and it's about an actress. Actually, it's a little bit similar to last week's film, I just having now realised. Death to Smoochie, we did last time. And this, again, is about someone who gets fired from their acting job and is all bent out of shape about it. But it's completely different. Different era, different time, different approach. But vaguely the same theme of angry, out-of-work actor. And it's about an actor who's in a soap opera and is just miffed off because she thinks she's going to get fired and her character's going to be killed off. Her character is Sister George, a nun in a soap opera that looks terrible and kind of like The Archers. And it's about her personal life, which is quite weird because she is a odd lesbian from the 60s who is very bossy and angry and has a younger partner who she treats very weirdly. So, you know, we'll get into this. That's how I would sum it up. So, I tried my best. I probably should have just read the IMDb, but I ad-libbed, and, you know, there you go. I picked it because I wanted to do something from the 60s, something a bit more art house, something different, and, you know, it's also, as a bonus, about lesbians, but proper ones. It's not titillating snuff rubbish for men. This is, you know, issues and proper lesbian stuff. Interesting.
It was certainly very different. You're quite right in that regard. Well, I suppose we should start on expectations. I didn't really know what to think. You give me a brief outline before we kind of watched the film, and I thought, okay. And I didn't know what to make. I thought, you know, it's the 60s. Like, it was a time where things were starting to get a bit more edgy, but still, it's the 60s, so I think I was expecting something a little more timid, perhaps, than what we got.
Well, it really pushes the boundaries of what was acceptable in cinema, just because, it's about, you know, the lesbian content, but also more about the kind of portrayal of women in a way as well.
Mm.
Very edgy.
I suppose I didn't really know what to expect. There were so many factors. Just the, like you say, the name alone is like, well, that's, what's that about?
I can't even understand it as a sentence.
I thought it was a Western.
It does kind of sound like a Western.
It's a little bit too close to Two Mules for Sister Sarah. Like, I don't know. It's only none sister-based film set in the West I can think of. But I can confuse it with that, sure.
Sister, perhaps religious-based.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously, because it's a film about lesbians, the title also, having sister, combined with a masculine name, George. Although, Abby, you have a co-worker who's a woman who's called George.
Yes, her name is Georgina.
Makes sense, yeah, no, makes sense. But it could be Sister Georgina, couldn't it, in the film, if you wanted.
Although I thought the film was trying to make some like weird symbolic gesture by calling both of its like lead lesbian characters by a like a male name, but it turned out it wasn't Charlie, it was Childie.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is even more like in your face symbolic of the character.
Oh, do you know what I did wrong? I didn't even say who the actors were. Like, I totally forgot about this. Like, this is... I can't be... I'm not going to do it anymore. I don't do the IMDb reading out thing because I totally can't. I should say, not to confuse it with any other The Killing of Sister George films, this is the one that stars Beryl Reed, Suzanne York, Coral Brown... Is it Coral? Yeah, Coral Brown, Ronald Fraser, and Patricia Medina. And more people, but that, you know...
Although it was fairly tight cast. There were like only like three, perhaps?
Three major
kind of characters. And even one of them just kind of blindsides you at the end.
Yeah,
as becoming
so.
Like a main, more of a main character.
And a large cast of extras that I wouldn't be surprised if they were genuine lesbians. Just... You know, in the club scene where there's a like in a ladies only club or a lesbian club or whatever you want to call it, there's quite a lot of women all dancing with each other. And you go, yeah, these aren't just let's get the actors any women off the street. This is bona fide lesbians, I think. It's my speculation. But then everyone, no, and you know, anyway, that's not we're not talking about that bit.
That's neither here nor there.
It's neither here nor there. You're right. Where were we before I finally got the intro to the film? Oh, Abby, it's your expectations we want to hear, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was a Western because of the title.
Mm.
And because that's one of your preferred genres of films as well.
Oh, yeah.
Inging around Clint Eastwood in a particular way.
Yeah, but they usually do all lead back to him because he's the best. I don't care if you're a John Wayne fan. I'm a Clint fan, so there.
So, thinking this was a Western must have been quite weird when you realised it wasn't.
Well, when it started, I thought... My expectations as it began was, oh, it's going to be a 1960s film like, I don't know, The Carry-Ons or something.
Oh.
Oh.
Mm.
No.
Carry-On having an abusive relationship with a younger woman.
Yeah.
That's a fair point. I think Beryl Reed, the main actress playing Sister George, I think she's quite famous for her comedy roles.
Yeah, that's what led me astray.
So yeah, if she's not in the Carry On film herself, I think she would have been like a St. Trinian's film or something.
Mm. And isn't Suzanne York is from like the Superman films?
Sure. I did recognise her, but I don't know where from.
Well, that's alright. So, you know, it was difficult. The first time I saw this, I wasn't 100% what I was getting into. I think I think a comedian had mentioned they'd watched it on a train or something, and they gave a brief synopsis, and I was like, oh, that sounds quite good. And they said it seemed quite good. I think what it was is the comedian Michael Legg had an anecdote about having an awkward moment on the train where it looked like he was watching pornography.
Yeah.
And because of the one scene in it where that's a bit saucy, and you know, he wanted to kind of explain that it was, yeah, he probably did, but you know, it was that thing of, well, it's an art house film, really, honestly, it isn't. You know, I think that was my in, is I heard about it that way, and I was like, well, actually, it sounds like an interesting film. And, yeah, and then it blew me away because there's so many weird moments. Because you expect a little bit of racy, weird relationship-y stuff to some extent. But you don't expect people to shout and throw scones and make people eat cigarette butts and then get all upset because they're enjoying it or pretending to.
It was quite the intense performance, shall we say.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is George, which is the I guess, nickname of June, who is the main character of sorts, is a sort of middle-aged, like, woman who looks like she, you know, is middle-aged and from the 60s, has that weird grey, horrible, curly, but fixed on top of her head hair. that looks almost wig-like. And she's quite a tough, plain-dressed woman. And she's an actor, and, you know, she does a soap opera that's kind of like The Archers, but only more boring, and a TV programme. Like a really boring Emmerdale or something. And she's a nun in it. And but, you know, she plays a sort of jolly-ish northern English woman in the show, like a nice nun lady. And then in real life, she's a very tough, bossy, lesbian.
Almost crazy lesbian.
Yeah. And she's in a partway abusive relationship with a younger woman. But, like, because she's middle-aged, and I think they name-drop Suzanne York's character. I don't know if I can call her childy, because she isn't, to me, it never sounded like she said that.
Yeah.
So Alice is her real name, but she's called Childy or Charlie or whatever. She is 30-something, 32 or whatever, but she acts and behaves somewhere, but like much younger and kind of more like a child in a way.
Yeah, they were like kind of really like hammering home that with like all her kind of dolls and the way she dresses and just the way she acts around George.
Yeah, and she's often, you know, she lives with George in their house or apartment or whatever. And, you know, she's often in negligee or her underwear. Which is nice if you're having a sort of happy lesbian relationship. I'm sure that's one of the perks. But they're an odd contrast because it's this sort of... she's not really a masculine woman, but she's like she likes a drink. And she's very angry and temperamental and moody, is George. And then Alice is so, you know... I mean, Abby, how would you describe them? I mean, I'm trying to flesh them out a bit.
Alice came off a bit ditzy at first, but I think she kind of got over it as time went on, and it's just, well, like, because this was based on a play, it means that everyone's characters are a little bit skewy, and they're more playing sort of types than they are people.
I know what you mean. I think it was, I think that was one of the resounding things of the film, was that it was clearly based on like a play, because of like very minimal settings and very, very talky.
Yeah,
and there's lots of scenes that, you know, you'd hope to get a reaction out of a live audience with. There was, you know, just moments that seem more like they would fit in a play, just because of, like you say, it's kind of a talkier kind of film. But yeah, so you know, we've got these are the two characters: weird actress who is a drunk and is because she doesn't really mother Alice, I don't think. It's kind of like that, but she's more, as I, you know, this is my second time watching it, she's more like an older, mean sister. Like, she plays nice occasionally, and is sorry and wants to be kind, but then wants to be obscenely cruel and horrid and just a massive jerk, or bitch, or, you know, you can choose your adjective, but she's a horrible piece of work at times to her, essentially her lover, who she treats partly like a child, partly like a younger sister, and then occasionally like a, you know, equal.
Yeah, it's very complicated. You're right. Their relationship is kind of constantly changing. Like you said, like sometimes it's a sister thing, and sometimes it's kind of like a mother daughter thing, and then sometimes it's lovers. So it really kind of, I don't know, it makes you question kind of like what a relationship is, I suppose.
Yeah, because it's weird, because you should be like, oh, this is a bit wrong. I mean, you shouldn't be, it's wrong because they're lesbians. I think, but it's wrong because it's almost a horrible, it's an abusive relationship, even though they both seem alright with each other enough of the time. They do just enough to make you go, oh, actually, they are alright with it. They don't hate each other. Mm. Or it's not properly abusive, it's just they're both messed up. And, you know, it could have been hinting at some kind of paedophile thing, but it's not really, it doesn't feel like that. It feels just a bit taboo, a bit wrong. Like, yeah, you know, it's about women who are into younger women, and there's an element of mothering, but it isn't like, you know, it isn't saying this is a wrong relationship, it's just a weird one.
One thing that kind of really threw me off was, like, right at the beginning, there is a really, really creepy scene where, like, they argue, and George kind of forces Childie to like eat her cigarette, like cigar butts, and it becomes a really kind of creepily dominant sexual thing. But that's the only kind of real moment of that during the whole film.
There's nothing as sort of potent as that.
Yeah. There's the stuff where she sort of bullies her a little bit most of the time. But that was the only time where he went, it's a bit much, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the only time it became a bit kind of creepily sexual.
Mm. And then it's an interesting one, because in a way, even though Alice is the immature one of the two, and is less mature on an age level, like, actually, George is quite an immature person, because she doesn't really deal with her mood swings. She's basically under a lot of pressure, because she thinks she's going to be fired from a job she loves, and she has this attachment to the character she plays and the stories. I mean, you know, she must like the fame and the money and the notoriety, but she has a genuine affection for this job she has. And her character's going to be killed off, and that adds a level of, like, you're murdering me. It's kind of an affront to you, I guess. But she doesn't deal with that very well, because she gets in such a mess. It's sort of, you need to grow up a bit yourself. It's kind of how you feel about George. So it's interesting that...
Especially with the alcoholism and everything.
I guess. Yeah, she turns to the drink quite a lot. But then, you know, it is British women.
I will say, it was some blinding drunk acting. it was good. It was almost convincing.
Well, the hiccup for me was the one that, like, oh, come on now. Hiccuping, really? What are we for?
That was, like, the first sign of it. But, like, after that, I don't know, it's just the way she kind of talks and the way kind of, like, language is just a bit more fruity when she starts coming drunk. I don't know, it was kind of well-observed kind of drunk.
It's hard to
play drunk on film, convincingly, and she did it well. I don't know if that's a really good compliment for her, but there it is.
Well, the dialogue was good, because it sort of suggested she couldn't concentrate on what she wanted to talk about, and, well, like, there was that funny scene where she starts doing an impression of some fat bloke in Roy's head, and she does his voice and leans back as she's doing it, and it's, like, really weird.
Was that dubbed?
It sounded odd, didn't it? I thought it might have been, but it could have been a really good voice she threw.
Because if it wasn't dubbed, that was brilliant.
Yeah. If it was dubbed,
it did seem a bit off.
The person that they name dropped there was a real actor.
What did he say? So that we the world should be nicer or something like that, wasn't it? Was a something.
There's not enough kindness in the world.
Yeah, something like that.
It was weird for me in particular, because it sounded like that line from Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Oh. Yeah, well, you're right. The acting was spot on across, I thought. Everyone was very realistic and believable and kind of interesting. So it's this weird moment where she gets cross, and I think basically Alice says something she goes too far, and, you know, gets annoyed with all this bullying she's having to put up with, and says something horrible about her job or, you know, whatever. And this strange ritual, or, Abby, what was the word you used when we were watching it?
Custom.
They have, like, this strange custom they occasionally go to, it was implied, where she, as penance, has to, like, go on her knees and sort of eat the butt of George's cigar, and it was extra weird, because in defiance, because it was horrible, Alice decided she would pretend to enjoy it, and that really upset George and made her have, like, a hissy fit about how she's ruining this oddly sexual punishment of eating a cigar butt by pretending it was not horrible. And it just, it was such a weird thing to happen.
Especially right at the beginning as well. And kind of the fact that the rest of the film doesn't kind of reach that kind of point.
Mm. Well, it was interesting at times, because when George was in other company other than her partner, she would try and be civil. And there would be these ridiculous outbursts where she was losing her patience with someone. Or was, you know, unable to control Alice enough. Like, she would talk and get attention, and that would annoy George. And so she wasn't very good at holding off on the... Like, and she'd let her guard down and clearly give away that she's a mean, horrible person. And then on set, when the, you know, she would be a massive diva and get really cross, all mm-hmm. because she was paranoid at losing her job, I guess. And a drunk. Yeah. She was a drunk as well, I suppose. Plus, were you going to mention something, Anthony?
I can't. It's such a powerhouse performance by Beryl Reed that everything she does is just brilliant. I love the way she kind of just viciously insults everyone. It's brilliant. I think she gets it really right. She hits the nail on the head in this performance.
Yeah, because
although she does kind of steal the show from everyone else.
Yeah, to some extent. She's a very sad character.
Although it does make sense, because that's kind of what her character wants, if you know what I mean. She wants to be the centre of attention and steal the show.
Hmm.
Yeah, she doesn't like being upstaged, and I think she's very paranoid. She's overly paranoid, because sometimes it's unwarranted, and then occasionally it's sort of prompted by people. I mean, she is correct in that she's, you know, going to lose her role in this soap opera because the character's going to be killed. But it does take, like, part of the story is it takes a while for that conclusion to be got to, and some of the journey is showing, you know, George's personal life, that she's a raving drunk, an abusive person, childish, full of mood swings, can be tender and nice, but is a massive scene-stealing headache. And then we have this progression of her desperately trying to find out, it, like from her the higher-ups in the BBC, if, you know, her character is getting killed off. And there's lots of highs and lows where she thinks she is, and then it's revealed that she's ill, and she's really worried that her character's going to die, and she, you know, causes a massive scene and storms out and is a massive jerk. And then there's times where she thinks she's got her job back because she gets more information. And then it's kind of revealed she has lost it. And, you know, it's really about that, the ups and downs and how bad one woman is at dealing with kind of this, what should be fairly reasonable. It's like you've had a several year career in a soap. Your character's been getting killed off, as often happens. Now it's time to move on and voice a cow.
No,
which, you know, she doesn't take well.
That we, I don't, let me forget to talk about that ending.
Oh, we won't.
We could jump about where we please. You know, it is one of the few films that ends with a woman sadly mooing to herself on a set that she smashed up. So that's the ending, Abby. If you want to talk about it,
we'll bring it up. It makes sense to put that at the end, I think.
Okay,
but we'll get there, Abby. Don't you worry. Yeah. I've got a few things to say about that too. Actually, but yeah, you're saying, it's like it's constantly playing on the fact of, even though it starts off with her coming home and saying like, "I think I'm going to get fired,"
or get killed.
It does play that at the beginning. The cleverly worded kind of soliloquy she has, but throughout the film, you're always kind of questioning, was this inevitable? Was she just going to be gone because she's been there for so long, or is it really her actions during the film that lead to her dismissal?
Yeah, throughout all of her time, we see her doing her job. She's often quite difficult and, you know, unreliable. Even though, you know, she can do the job, it's like she's not the best person to work with, it seems.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, is it her paranoia that ultimately leads to her downfall?
Yeah, it is about you kind of making, once you've thought you're going to be fired, you kind of start causing it by being unreasonable, by not being able to deal with the fact that you might be fired. You've kind of made it a good reason. You know, she kind of justifies the fact that she's being killed off by being difficult to work with. So, you know, it's a nice journey in terms of a film. And then on top of that, you just have this strange kind of lesbian couple world we inhabit for a bit. This is a very strange one. It's not a conventional one by any means. And
no.
It never reflects on women in general in you know, the whole film.
Yeah, and the film never portrays it as, like, overly what's the word I'm looking for? Like, taboo or wrong or anything like that.
The film basically is just showing you, look, this is
life.
Yeah. This is her, this is a weird life, but it's their life, and it's, It wasn't ever a problem they were lesbians. It was a bit hush-hush,
yeah.
And let's not be too open about it working in television. But everyone in television knew they were, like, it was not just roommates. It was known, but not said. And no one went around secretly being gay, particularly.
Yeah, and that just wasn't the focus of the film.
Yeah.
Which, I'm pretty sure, like, most films back in the day that it featured homosexuality was about the keeping it secret side.
Well, that's often... It's always about the coming out, usually. Like, there's a big gay genre out there, and it is predominantly about coming out, being oppressed in some way. Like, it's always an issue movie. And this one was, you know, it had plenty of issues, but it wasn't about the issue of being gay. This was presented like, the lesbian world is a normal world, it is part of the 60s London, and we're not really addressing any of the usual stuff around it. We are just living in the scene with these people and seeing their world, you know, where they're accepted and normal. Not normal, but, you know, accepted.
Plus, I'm not sure... how much at this point media was kind of willing to portray women as such kind of nasty kind of characters.
Yeah, and it was
predominantly kind of men who were kind of like the either kind of sexual predators or horribly domineering people.
And it's a very strong female cast. Like, all the main characters are female. Mm. A few of the side characters are men, but most of the significant characters, George has a friend who is a prostitute who lives, is like a neighbour, and she occasionally goes over there. And, it's all like she's a strong female character, and like the people who work in the television industry. Like, there's one large, blonde, slightly odd looking, like.
Australian.
Australian. Like, was she a runner or an assistant or something?
It's hard to say. She was a relatively important crew member.
And she got on George's nerves, like a lot of people did, because she was kind of hinting to George that her character was going to be killed. It was the kind of catalyst for the downfall in many ways. And there was just loads of strong female characters, including the BBC executive woman who later comes into the third act a lot more predominantly. But all this drama... and taboo areas explored, it's still quite a funny play and movie.
Yeah.
Like, they've got really funny moments. Like, when George first gets drunk and, catches a cab with the nuns.
Yeah.
I mean, just the pleasure in which he got in the cab and, like, hugged both the nuns. And then they cut to the taxi driver reacting and the noise of the nuns as some... unseen molestation of nuns goes on.
Yeah. It's the first time ever I've watched a film and gone, did you just touch up some nuns?
But it was funny, not sexy and arousing like you'd suspect. It was funny.
Or creepy, yeah, but it was kind of fun.
Yeah. It could have been very creepy. I mean, it could have been really horrible and inappropriate.
It was very bawdy.
Yeah, but we'll carry on in that regard.
Carry on in that regard. That's the new name.
And one of the nice, misleading moments was when one of the execs is at George's house and is going to break some bad news, and is very much alluding to the fact that, you know, TV shows move on and change with the times, and it's all leading to, so we're letting you go. But then it's this, actually, we've had a complaint from... the mother superior of the nuns you touched up. Mm. And they were writing to complain that you molested some nuns in a taxi. And then this whole debacle of her trying to deny it but coming up with really implausible, I just got caught up in their petticoats and they gave me quite the fright and all this.
Like, I thought they were vampire bats or something.
Yeah.
That was a weirdly drawn out scene though, because everyone knows she's there to like tell them something, but she keeps kind of like putting it off.
What I like about that as well is, in this film, they have a line of making up bizarre excuses or bizarre decoys, like it's fine. Like when she came back in the room, and they were having that weird thing with the doll, and trying and having this little role play with the doll, so that she didn't know that they were going through her briefcase. It's like, but yeah, she doesn't think you're going through a briefcase, but she does think that you're completely insane.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting scene because it's so conspicuous, isn't it? The way they just, we were just having a mental conversation with this doll. We definitely weren't nicking off your paperwork from your suitcase. It was the most awkward way you could walk in on two people. And yet, they didn't get caught, somehow. Another scene I quite like, which is a nice contrast to some of the abusiveness, is we get to see a little bit of Alice and June being nice to each other when they're going to like a fancy dress party or something, and they're both dressed up like Laurel and Hardy, respectively.
I suppose that's supposed to be a kind of another comment on their relationship.
Well, see, like, the women are dressed as men because they are taking men roles of.
just kind of. They are a comedy, like a kind of a comedy duo, but they're also quite violent towards each other.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean?
There are definite parallels where it's like, look, see, they're like Laurel and Hardy. If Laurel and Hardy were a lesbian couple, and actually, instead of being funny when they are abusive to each other, it's sad and kind of horrible.
Yeah, and that kind of makes you question the kind of Laurel and Hardy films as well, thinking, actually, it was all a bit of fun, but if you think about it, that's quite cruel.
Stan Laurel should have chucked Oliver Hardy a long time ago because he has been horribly bullied. And it is oddly paralleled. Like, they start acting as the two characters together because they're in hats. And for some reason, Childie is in like grey or white makeup to look more like Stan, and yet George just has the moustache on and the hat and all that. And they are convincingly, you can tell who they are, even though, you know, one is a hat on a big haired woman. And, you know, I just thought it was odd, this, why does one of you have face makeup on to look a bit more theatrical and the other one just the moustache will do? Anyway, but it draws a parallel between Oliver Hardy and Stan Laurel, and you kind of, and because they're like them in that one is short and chunky, and the other's thin, and one is childlike, and the other one is abusive, and they kind of play as the two characters. But also, George gets genuinely annoyed when they do some acting like the characters. And I think,
to be fair, well, that's one of the more kind of reasonable times she gets annoyed, because who wants people to spit in your hat? Also, that was really weird. I get it, like, you know, a funny water in your hat kind of thing. But she did just spit in her hat.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting how each time they play like Laurel and Hardy, one of them cracks and gets genuinely annoyed. It comes out of character. And essentially they are playing a bit of slapstick one-upmanship like Dan and Ollie would have done. They would have, you know, tweaked and messed with each other's hats, or, you know, did something to annoy each other and get each other back, but they fall out a little bit, but they have fun because splashing water in a hat and down your trousers and stuff is a laugh, isn't it?
Indeed.
I mean, I just thought it was good to have a moment where they were nice and they laughed together and enjoyed. And actually, they went out to like a weird swinging 60s lesbian club, which was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it all just kind of serves to just complicate the characters and their relationship, and just giving you so many perspectives that it's hard to judge whether it's a good relationship or a bad relationship throughout the play. It's like, because George is only ever kind of like abusive when she is like angry or paranoid.
Yeah.
And she just, the only way she knows how to deal with it is to take it out on other people. Which is a character flaw, but not necessarily making her a bad person.
Yeah, because she'll have moments where she's, like, alone or has, like, I think she goes to visit her friend who is a prostitute. She doesn't see her as a prostitute, she sees her as a friend. And they chat, and there's kind of a weird little scene where, like, a trainee prostitute is having a nice chat and seeing how good the soap opera is, and George can take the compliments and be all charming and nice. And then they get chatting anyway, and she basically realises that she just really likes Childie, and is going to, and then goes back and is very nice and is apologises, and they make up and stuff.
There is that too. She does apologise a lot.
She should.
For the things she does, which is just, it just complicates things more. It's a really kind of interesting relationship to watch.
Mm. I mean, you should apologise if you're throwing scones about. That's pretty mean and funny, but mean definitely losing your temper. I mean, uncouth. If you throw a scone, you the scone thrower is always the person to apologise.
Mm. You've broken the British code.
No one throws a scone. No matter how drunk you are, do not throw your food at a guest. Or a friend.
Well, I suppose this is a good point to kind of bring in the other character. What was her name? Mrs. Croft?
Mm-hmm. On IMDb, you got her as Mercy Croft?
Oh, yeah, they do mention Mercy at some point. Mercy Croft. But yeah, I suppose just at first she's a kind of executive to the television and kind of like an exposition kind of piece. But later on she becomes a bit more involved and is the kind of third character of the piece.
I want to give props to her early part of the performance where she was absolutely rising above all of their shenanigans as well. Yes, I suppose.
Very British.
I'm going to be very proper and formal, and I'm going to put up with your messing about and horrible abusiveness that I am clearly ignoring because I'm good and professional. And yeah, she was very, like, you know, as you expect, like an outsider who is seeing their relationship like two cats fighting or whatever. And she's sort of, as you said, Abby, rising above mostly. But as you see how the plot goes, you realise she's actually slowly kind of manipulating her way into the relationship she starts towards the end of the film with Childie. So, and it's not, you know, she doesn't play her cards, her gay card at all, until very late.
And to me, at least, it was a kind of total surprise. It's because I thought the film was playing it as it was just George's paranoia projecting onto Mrs. Croft. But and, then, like, towards the end, there is the kind of twist where it's like, oh, actually, she is the kind of antagonist of this.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is it's built on the paranoia that this BBC executive is going to essentially fire her or knows if she's going to be killed from the soap opera. And it is mostly about that. And at the end, in her speech, she sort of says, "Look, I didn't get you fired from it, and it had nothing to do with me. It was nothing, you know. There's another. That would have happened anyway. And it isn't her fault, this TV exec. But the real thorn in the side that's there is she has to let go George from her job, but she's also very coldly crowbarring into the relationship." And sees Childie as a potential, you know, hookup. And it's very subtle, because she's very professional, and she sort of gets in there by complimenting Childie's poetry, and, you know, being a producer, she can sort of set her up. But then I think it's that's in a manipulation, to some extent.
At first it kind of plays it like the major kind of theme is it going to be about her, about Childie kind of succeeding George as the kind of the dominant one in the relationship because she is now going to become like the famous kind of artist because of her poetry, and she's just a bit concerned about overshadowing George that way, which is kind of like how you think it's going to go. But then when you see kind of the reveal at the end that Croft is a lesbian and after her, it's like actually that was some clever manipulation going on.
And it's just that it adds to the tragedy of George, because you feel like she deserves some of what she got, because she's quite a difficult, horrid person at times. And you still buy into her being nice, and actually you feel sorry for her, and you really feel sorry, because you know, by the end she's lost her job, she's severed a lot of ties with people that could have, you know, saved her grace, and she should have capitalized on many career opportunities, and she instead gets all moody and offended by everything. And but by when she's lost her relationship as well, and it's all from the same, you know, direction or person, she's really like at her lowest ebb by the end of the film. So it adds to the tragedy, the fact that this one woman has tactfully got her, you know, tactfully had to treat her well, but got, you know, basically fire her, and then steal her girlfriend away. It's just so wrong. And that's what's extra horrible. And because essentially, Childie's potentially moving into a better relationship. It should be a more rash and reasonable person taking care of her.
But yeah, but you still have your doubts because she's still being manipulated into it.
Yeah,
and you kind of feel like it's just going to continue with someone else.
Yeah, because you get that vibe like, well, you're a producer and you've partly manipulated this. So are you actually going along with the doll thing because it's your personal kick? Like, this is another weird element. Like, we add another lesbian character and she has her own weird things where she's oddly kind of mothering and she wants to have, almost like she wants Childie to be her own personal doll. Because she, like, as soon as a Childie is with this executive, she starts wearing a long wig, like, to have long blonde hair. Well, she's blonde anyway, but it's, like, long hair, and there's this implication that she wants to be literally groomed by this woman, you know?
Mm. That was an odd moment, because I thought that was meant to show the passage of time.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
It's a bit misleading at first. What did you make of this, this type of character she was?
It was the weirdest thing where they've done it in a few different places in this, but with her in particular, they've made them do things that men were known to do at the time. And with the TV producer, it was, oh, you're going to give her some work because you fancy her, is it? Oh, it's like that, is it? I see.
Yeah. And then on top of the traditional roles, there's this weird, these odd moments where she, like, talks to the, like, because Childie has lots of dolls, and it's always, everyone kind of looks a bit like, oh yeah, what's wrong with you, you immature, weird lady? What's the deal here? And there's that, she occasionally has a moment where she's alone, and she's with one of the dolls that Childie has asked for. And she just starts speaking to it and talking to it nicely, and there's this sort of implied double meaning that she's perhaps referring to the relationship she wants to start with Childie. Mm. And so she seems to be, you know, she's a powerful heir. Like, I think she's a widow. Who knows what the backstory there is? I mean, what happened to her husband? But, you know, it's implying she wants to be a kind of another firm mother-ish figure to this 30-year-old woman who pretends a little bit to be a girl. So again, it's another messed up relationship. It's by no means like normal, I don't think.
Not at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's really not the lesbianness that makes it weird. It's the strange roles they want to play with each other.
Mm.
I just thought it was a really interesting character to inject. And like you say, it happens so slowly and it's almost just in the third act when it gets properly
It did. It blindsided me, and I was totally... I didn't think it would go that way.
Yeah, because essentially we're having a nice time in a all-women's lesbian club, and there's, like, short haircuts everywhere, possibly because they're lesbians, possibly because it's the 60s, and they're all dancing together. There's like, nice slow numbers and fast, trendy numbers, and there's a nice atmosphere, there's a band playing, and there's lots of fun being had, and there's a little bit of a window into the lesbian scene of the 60s, because there's a few extra characters who are chatting amongst the main cast. And, you know, this TV exec comes down and has a private chat with them, and this is kind of a pivotal, I will talk to Childie for the first time on her own, and sort of set the ball in motion that I could help you with your poetry and get you on TV or something. And that's kind of the in then, because, you know, it happens quite quickly towards the end where the relationship is crowbarred in on. And it just, all of a sudden, it's like, okay, we've gone from, you know, the focus being on George being a temper tantrum having mad woman to suddenly this, you know, predatorial TV executive woman just gets all a bit, you know, adult, doesn't it? It has the scene that is, you know, there's no other way of saying it, but she finger manipulates. Yeah. There's no easy way to say it. But some lesbian fingering goes on, and a bit of breast licking, and smooching, and altogether tense sexual encounters.
Go
on, Abby.
Well, just the bizarre thing about it is you just don't really know what the woman's doing.
It's first.
Because she's being very still, except for her hand, which is presumably doing something off frame.
Yeah, because essentially, you know, she says something like, she puts one of the dolls that, because they're running off together at this point, because George has, I guess, been too horrible to Alice, and the executive lady wants to sort of rescue her before, you know, they make up again, like, or something.
Mm.
And so she brings the second doll that they're going to take, you know, to wherever they're going. And she puts it to bed because they're going on a long trip, and it's very motherly. And then she's on the edge of the bed where Alice is lying down. And then it becomes a bit more adult, and, you know, I think she starts touching her, and at first, like, she's pushed away, but she persists, and then, you know, tops are unbuttoned, breasts are exposed, and then it's implied that they have manual sex with each other, or rather, it is implied that manual sex is had, but it is the
manual
strange...
Manual sex?
Yeah, with your hand.
Manual?
What would you call it?
Manual?
Finger banging.
I don't know, just manual kind of makes it sound like usually we're on automatic and, like, machines are doing it for us.
Well, with lesbians, that could... In this case, she is, you know... molested.
Yes.
In a consenting and nice way for them. And, you know, it's very weird because all we get essentially is the facial expressions of, you know, anticipation, and then also, you know, as the erotica heightens, it's some very strange expressions to convey, I am having a nice time. That's all I'm saying. It's weird to look at.
It's a slightly awkward scene. But it's also, for a sex scene, fairly tasteful, I suppose, despite its kind of awkwardness.
Yeah, it's by no means graphic. It's just the fact that there's this woman in quite a nice red business suit, slightly gurning, as she does something to a young woman who's having fun and getting into it.
And the close-ups were a bit odd.
That's all I'm saying.
It was hard to define what they were kind of thinking.
And then there's a little bit of, you know, I thought it was funny when she's sort of caressing her breast and is, like, licking or kissing it or something. And then she's like, Alice pulls her head back to do it more firmly. And it's like, all right, guys.
The whole thing is just extra creepy because of the kind of mother-daughter moment they have just beforehand.
Yeah.
And then you kind of think, like, yeah. It kind of likens it to child abuse.
Kind of. It's a very weird area to be in.
Mm.
With George and Alice, though there is that element, it always felt like they were like lovers / like they behaved like sisters who can't always get on, which isn't as weird for some reason. It's kind of like, well, you're just two women fighting occasionally and one of you's older and a bit more dominant. That's sort of fine, but this is because we're seeing more intimately what happens. It kind of is a bit more creepy. And then George comes back, discovers them, is hurt like any spurned lover would be, and we have quite a dramatic scene where everyone, mainly the TV executive lady, tells everyone what for. Like, George is cross and says a few things. Everyone's feelings get hurt, but this is when we get a big dump of George being told, you're dumped, but also here's some problems with you. This is why you were fired. You were horrible. This is, you know, these things happen. You would have been moved on. It isn't my fault. You've been too abusive to Childie. You know, she gives a, you know, a big list of stuff that George can't really deal with.
Yeah, I think you used the word dump there. And I think, I don't have many kind of problems with this film, But this is one, and it kind of... The last 5 minutes kind of has too much.
It undoes all the ambiguity a little bit.
Yeah, George explains, like, really briefly about kind of Childie's backstory, and I feel like we kind of needed a bit more of that.
But it really adds an extra dimension when she sort of says hurtfully that, Alice, who is called Childie, has her own child that she had when she was 15, so that she is estranged from. And then you go, wow, you have all these dolls and want to look after them like you're a mother, and yet you were a mother, and you want to behave like a child yourself. It's all, wow, that adds a complex dimension to it.
It does. And the film pretty much ends there. There's one more scene which doesn't really kind of give us any conclusion to George's character.
Well, there's two significant things, I think. And one is she goes to her friend, the prostitute's house, and asks if she could just, she needed to go somewhere to have a cry, which I think is somewhat relatable. It's like sometimes you just, I just want a room to cry in, my life's so hard. But then also it's so sad and tragic. You kind of go, oh gosh, that's the despair you've reached, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Going to a prostitute to use her house to cry in. But and also George ends up back on the set that she's been working on, and smashes it up and stuff as well.
Yeah, and I feel like we've come to that moment now, Abby, where we can discuss the end. The film just left us on a really odd note where I feel like that I just wanted a bit more conclusion to George's kind of story. If you know what I mean. It does make sense, but, like, out of context, that is a really, really weird moment.
Yeah, I should just explain that she goes to the studio where she was filming the TV show, and at first she accidentally knocks something over, which she looks sort of half sorry about, and then she notices that the coffin for her character is made out of plywood that is a bit rubbish. And she flips out and starts breaking everything.
I think she throws the coffin through the pub window and things as well. Yeah. And knocks over lights and stuff.
She does. And because elsewhere in the movie, she had been offered another part where she would be the voice of a puppet cow, she just sort of ends up on the bench of the set just going, "Moo! Moo! Moo!"
Yeah, it just ends with her booing sadly to herself on a broken studio.
I suppose it's trying to say, she's kind of resigned to the fact that this is going to be her life now and that's going to be her future kind of thing.
And symbolically how she feels. I mean, because she's insulted.
Yeah.
I mean, she shouldn't be, because it's an acceptable thing to be offered for an actress to do a voice of a children's program character. But she doesn't want to be perceived as a cow. I think she'd rather be perceived as a lovely nun who is the cherished member of a soap opera. Mm. And so being a cow is an insult to her, I guess. And she's been, she probably is a bit of a cow.
She is.
in the abusive term, not in a literal sense. But I think it's an apt ending. I don't think it needed too much more. Really, because part of me still wants, Alice to get back with George after realising this exec isn't all that. But that's just because I think I have bought into their relationship a bit, even with its weirdness and flaws. And one of the weird things is they say, instead of they love each other, they almost say it occasionally, instead they say they've been together so long, as if it's familiarity rather than love that they have for each other, which is a kind of interesting dynamic. But, I think it's apt because she's on the set, where we haven't talked about it that much, but a lot of the scenes are based on her being a jerk, or, like, when she's doing the final death scene of her character, she just has to lie on the floor and pretend to be dead because her character's had a motorbike car accident thing. And she's messing about because who cares, it's my last day and I'm not in this scene. So she's causing everyone to, flub their lines by pulling faces and... pretending to sleep and things. And even the people who are annoyed at her are kind of laughing at how funny it is, all these, outtakes they're essentially causing. And it's like a nice moment where you go, oh, there are people in the TV industry that like her and are okay with her, despite the large quantity of cast members and other staff that seem to fall out with her at various points, or that she gets jealous of and is rude to.
I thought, like, most of them were fairly reasonable, considering how she treated most of them.
Yeah,
like, there's the scene where they're having a kind of farewell party, I suppose, because she's filmed her last day, and she just keeps insulting everyone and just burning all the bridges she can in this one scene. And people are surprisingly okay with it.
A few people are affronted, but they don't do anything. Everyone's very British and polite. Like, a guy gets, a cast member gets, that she's jealous of, gets loads of gin or something poured on to him. And, you know, he doesn't seem to like it, but he puts up with it, with his lemon wedge on his head. And my favourite amount of abuse that George hands out is to the TV executive who is stealing her lady. And she's all polite and nice, and she's smiling and saying everything in a nice tone, but is being absolutely horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And not actually causing a scene for once, but, you know, saying horrible things in a nice, polite way, just to try and get back at her. I thought that was really interesting.
I think the one that got me was when she just lets loose on the kind of older lady producer who wants her to play the cow.
Again, and then, that woman, very reasonable.
Exactly.
Maybe she'll still get the job. Yeah. It's crazy.
I like the way that... not Nolan. Croft. I'm going to call her Nolan. I like the way that she just fobbed off by going, it's all right, she's overwrought. She's not overwrought. She's rude. That's what she is.
Yeah. I mean, she should be a bit rude to you, Croft, because essentially you're stealing her lover and, not if not the cause of her firing, then, you know, the messenger. It's kind of a weird one. Abby, do you have any favourite abuse moments? There's quite a lot.
No, nothing sticks out above the rest. It's just a generally good performance of spite most of the time.
I think one of my favourites is when she's really having to go at the Australian kind of producer.
Actually, yeah, that was good.
Because it was the first time is kind of fairly abrupt, and that's kind of like, wow, that's pretty bad and funny. And then, like, as the scene progresses, she's kind of chasing her out of the studio, and then they have a moment outside where I think, like, she says, like, F off to her, but, like, a car horn.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
like,
good.
Masks it.
Yeah.
So I laughed at that a bit.
That's another taboo as well. It's quite a, you know... I mean, there's...
There's a lot of language. I was really surprised.
Yeah. I mean, because it's such a risky type of film. It's 68, so it's getting on in the 60s, but it's got lesbianism. It's got a full female cast of quite, you know, horrible characters, some of them. Kind of weird relationships, not just lesbian, but weird ones. And then a blasé-ness to, well, this is all normal. You shouldn't be weirded out by it. It's really progressive and pushes the envelope of what's usually acceptable in that era.
It probably has more to do with the play than the movie itself, per se. But if you've got an 18 certificate for one thing, you may as well throw in the rest. Once you've got that 18, just go with it.
Let's see those lesbians properly get down to it. Is that what you're saying, Abby?
Not just this movie, I mean in general. Like when they make one that's really violent, it's like, well, you've chopped someone's head off. I think you're allowed to say shit now.
It's also quite weird, the flip side, where there's so much swearing, you go, well, it's weird you're being PG, but I'm pretty sure usually Robin Williams shouldn't have said those things. Yeah, it's a weird one. It's very surprising how taboo it gets, considering you go, well, the 60s, it must be somewhat mild. And it really is more challenging than a lot of films will be. I mean, some will do this to deliberately be, oh, aren't we racy? But this one, it felt like it was being valid with anything it challenged. It was challenging on purpose, but not just for the, ooh, that shocked you. It wasn't trying to shock us, I don't think. It was trying to amuse us and draw us in, which I think is important.
Yeah, I think you used the right word there. The film is very challenging. It just presents you with such... flawed and kind of interesting characters and the relationships they have, and it's just there's no clear answer to kind of whether these are good people, whether they're good relationships. It's very challenging and thought-provoking. And I suppose I wasn't expecting that so much from this film. And then just ended up really liking it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think it could easily divide in the sense that you might just think, oh, these are all horrible jerks.
Mm.
Yeah, like there's the two main dominant lesbian characters are maybe a shade horrible, but it's so full of laughs. You forgive that they're obnoxious because they can make you feel, or at least George can kind of make up for it by being funny and drunk, or like just funny and nice, and it's got moments of touchingness, and it somehow creeps you out without going too dark. Like you don't ever commit fully to, I wish I hadn't seen this. You know, you just feel a bit uncomfortable occasionally, but I think that's okay. And it kind of makes me want to see what their relationship's like when she's not being fired.
This film really, I really want to kind of see the actual play it's based off, coming off from the film, because it's just really interesting. Like I'm guessing most of the dialogue has come from the play, and it's just really on point and funny and harsh, and there's not much to say. It's just a really good film.
Yeah. So you know we've talked around various elements of the film. We've basically covered the broad strokes, and we started getting into what we feel about it. Let's give it our usual awkward rating system of some arbitrary link. So I was going to suggest that we should all think of a nun, but off podcast, Abby reminded me that
nurse.
Yes, not she's a nurse.
What about
why is she called her sister? Then?
Something soap opera related.
Which soap opera is she? Is the film?
But we can't answer that because I don't think any soap opera is as good as this film is.
That's probably fair. But what? So if she is a nurse, why is she called sister?
It's a degree of nurse.
Is there like a mother nurse or?
Generally, I think it's kind of like these days. I think midwives are kind of referred to as sister.
They're still sisters. It's just they don't usually say it much.
Okay.
So it took the patients anymore because it has no context for the patients. But it's a rank of a nurse.
It's odd. Okay, so, but then she does feel up some nuns, so there's a nun link. Which angry lesbian? No, I don't know. What can we do then as a rating? Yeah, which soap opera, which abusive partner? I really don't know. Maybe we have to do lesbians out of 10 or something. Because we've been slightly going back to the old out of 10 or out of numbers. And just go
yeah,
take
like
the
that.
Easy route. You don't like that.
No, I like making my metaphors every week.
Good. Who's unwrapping sweets?
Oh, sorry, I'm fiddling.
So you want to do some kind of awkward metaphor. Please, Abby, suggest one or do one. And me and Anthony will struggle and think of one as best
well,
we can.
We could have a on-screen death, if you like. Since it's called The Killing of Sister George and it was about her character being killed.
We can call back to The Death of Smoochie, which is only slightly like. Lots of craziness and lots of angry TV people. Manipulative. You know, there's links to Smoochie. What on-screen death, you're saying?
Or
preferably TV, but we can, you know.
I was going to say, maybe what soap opera character is it? Or kind of what soap opera death or something like that?
Anyone want to try one?
Kind of. I think I've got one.
Go on.
She's kind of like either like the Peggy Mitchell or the Pat Butcher of kind of soap operas. Just well,
Pat.
Yeah, obviously because of the kind of similar kind of characters, kind of larger than life, kind of domineering women. But she's just kind of just such a kind of a staple of. Of EastEnders, it's kind of like one of the first images that comes to your mind when you think of soap operas, kind of like either Pat Butcher or Peggy Mitchell kind of thing. And I don't know, they're just really loved characters that have been there for a long time and were just really good at their job.
I like that you've managed to somehow talk about soap operas without really caring about them. You know enough to name drop some famous characters, and I appreciate your attempt. Because I don't think any of us are big soap opera fans, are we?
No.
My metaphor isn't even going to relate to a specific person.
Go on.
Mine's just about how in a soap around Christmas time, they always get really ambitious and explode something.
Plane crash, etc.
And usually someone dies. That's the thing at Christmas.
Yeah.
It's so cheery. But it's like that where a lot of the elements of it are sort of, my case is actually kitchen sink, isn't it?
What do you mean?
In terms of cinema.
Yeah, I imagine if the play would have been just set in that one kind of room, so, yeah.
Kitchen sink, drama, comedy, tragedy.
Yeah, and how no one expects it to be, one, about lesbians, two, about a lesbian love triangle, and just for there to be these various elements in it that are so much bigger and more spectacular yeah. than the mundane environment would suggest.
Yeah, I get you. And it's just, it all kind of packs it in to like, it's the antithesis of the whole year in that one episode, and it's just, there's so much drama and horribleness and complicatedness. I like that.
Mind-blowing, spectacular, melodramatic. Yeah. I guess if we're going for soap-related metaphors, I did suggest it's like The Archers, which is a terrible radio soap that we have in Britain that's for some reason still going, despite being probably the most banal thing that Radio 4 could put on. That was just a scathing review of Archer's
That was completely unnecessary.
It wasn't. That's how the thing they made, what was it called, like Mulberry or something, or Appleberry? Something odd. The name of the soap opera she made as a nurse, sister, George Villager.
I don't recall, I'm sorry.
Anyway, the show itself was a terrible black and white soap opera that was dull looking. It looked like all the outtakes when there wasn't a murder in... Midsummer Murders, yeah. The off weeks where there's no villainy going on. It looked like that kind of thing. Just some kid has the mumps and there's a barman wiping a glass clean.
I think at one point I said that it's like Bedknobs and Broomsticks if there was no magic.
Yep.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. I could kind of see that. And there was a lot more lesbianism. I'm going to go, though, it's a bit like Hollyoaks, which I think had the first ever on-screen lesbian kiss on television, at least in this country.
Yes, I think you're right.
Familiar.
And it's very melodramatic. It's one of the more aimed at younger people type soap operas. So there's maybe a little bit of Hollyoaks mixed with Coronation Street because it's got that sort of, even though it's colour, it's got a kind of black and white, the classic Coronation Street feel to it at times. The kind of streety melodrama mixed in with that, oh my gosh, it's so racy. It's got lesbianness and all kinds of perverse love triangles and things, you know. So it's that weird mix of the old and the new. So it's kind of Coronation Hollyoaks-ish, kind of pushing taboos, but also being dated and kind of weird. And a strange blend. And I think I did actually... There's a little time period of every soap opera where I kind of followed it partially for a bit. Coronation Street was on when my parents watched it, and I happened to, like, osmose information from it for a period. I think EastEnders, I think I knew someone who was into that. Hollyoaks was on at a time when you were just waking up as a student, so you'd end up watching that. Probably after Scrubs finished, you'd watch Hollyoaks because you couldn't be bothered to move. You know, so there's each soap opera I've known for a bit. And I feel like it's a bit Hollyoaks, a bit Coronation Street. And that's as best I can do.
Like it's that period where you get sucked in for the shortest amount of time.
Yeah. You start to know them and get enthralled.
You just had me reflecting on how the Coronation Street theme, I don't know if it still is, but at least used to be, even more depressing than the EastEnders one. Because it was just that... like, really? You're pulling me in with this?
Yeah, it's got that sort of suicide on a chocolate box kind of vibe. Yeah, I don't know. It's just making me think about how soaps are incredibly addictive. Because they are. They have that kind of, I have to see what happens next to the people I care about. And then after a while you go, this person has had they've had an abortion, 3 children, they've been murdered twice. They've, you know, had 8 affairs.
Yeah.
They've done everything.
Yeah, like, even though soaps are supposed to be kind of real life, and actually not that much drama happens in real life. It's like, it just piles on. There's just so much drama, and everything becomes so complicated and kind of dark.
It's the lifers that it shows up the most on. With some characters, they come, they stick around for a while, and then they go. Mm. And with them, it's like, your chapters made sense. You were in the street for a bit, you got divorced, you had an affair, then you went off and you started again. There's people like, I always think of Ian Beale in this particular frame of conversation where it's like, you have had literally everything that could happen to anyone in the world happen to you. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so I think we've moved into a conversation where we will just review the genre soap opera now. But I would say it is kind of The Killing of Sister George is that special Christmas episode of a soap opera, and it's a special crossover episode where Coronation Street and Hollyoaks have come together for a special of lesbian triangle drama. And what was your metaphor, Anthony?
Just a kind of Pat Butcher
and Thingy from EastEnders.
Peggy Mitchell.
Peggy Mitchell have come into Hollyoaks and Coronation Street for a lesbian special drama. It's that kind of, and which is kind of good. If that doesn't draw you to watching it, I don't know what will. I'd watch that episode of a soap, to be honest. If that happened, I would tune in. Mainly because it's terrifying. And this film, at times, is a little bit terrifying. So yeah, The Killing of Sister George, thumbs up all round. And generally challenging. So if that's what you fancy, go ahead. You've had it spoiled now. And if you haven't had it spoiled because you saw it and you wanted to listen to other people talk about it, let us know what your thoughts were, because we are more than interested. The internet is easy to use. You'll figure it out, dear listener. But for now, we'll just have to say goodbye.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
Moo.
Moo.
Moo.